بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is the fourth lecture of our series titled Trying to Understand Religion in the Contemporary World. We are slowly moving towards identifying those aspects of human thought, human behavior on which the Quran has shed light and has put forth its idea of how man needs to understand himself and how guidance from God through the Prophet takes him forward on the path of that intelligence which is a blessing from God, the soul which is the greatest creation of God, and make him understand the things which are not visible, which the Quran speaks as the ghaib, the unseen, and then move his civilizational caravan towards higher levels of achievement, obviously propelled by higher levels of understanding. The last three lectures tried to take a small step towards what I think would be culminating in this lecture of ours, where the issue to be discussed would be what is the destiny of man from the point of view of the Quran. Philosophy as such takes a lot of interest in this topic of human destiny. Why he is what he is, how his behavior is close to animal behavior, where he goes away from it, what is the reason for that. There have been so many theories put forward, and Quran puts its own way of looking at things through the last prophet coming with the last book revealed to him by God, and somebody who was unlettered, because there is no proof of the prophet ever having written anything or having read anything. So someone pure and pristine in his behavior as a servant of God, the abd part of him, abduhu wa rasulu. What made the prophet the prophet? His being a perfect servant of God, abd of God. So through a perfect abd of God, unlettered but untainted as well by the jahiliya of the Arabian Peninsula, and moving himself to understand God as a tradition of the Abrahamic religion, which was the main religion, which was followed nearly 300 years before the Prophet. The period of Jahiliyyah was something like about 300 years before him. So that religion of pure monotheism, of worshipping one God, was available to the people, and obviously some of them still held on to that religion and kept themselves away, refrained from practicing polytheism and worshipping idols. The Prophet was one of them. They were also called the Hunafa, the pure ones. They didn't want to defile their pure faith in God with idol worship. So we have this person born as an orphan, losing his mother at a young age, being supported and taken care by his uncle Abu Talib, and then coming out with this Quran at the age of 40 years. A revelation given to him through the angel Gabriel or Jibreel. So we have a process now of a pure intellect, capable of understanding and accepting God completely to the best of its capacity coming forward, and God taking it as the slate on which to write his message and convey it through him to us human beings till the end of time. The Quran has very clearly expressed what man is and why he has been created. The very famous verse which I hinted at, verse number 72 of chapter Ahzab, the 33rd chapter, verse 72. The verse is very clear about what it is that the humans are carrying and what it is that the humans are involved with. إِنَّا عَرَضْنَا الْأَمَانَةَ عَلَى السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَالْجِبَالِ فَأَبَيْنَا أَن يَحْمِلْنَاهَا وَأَشْفَقْنَا مِنْهَا وَحَمَلَهَا الْإِنسَانُ إِنَّهُ كَانَ ظَلُومًا جَهُولًا. We indeed presented the trust to the heavens and the earth and the mountains, but they refused to bear it and were apprehensive of it, fearful of it. But man undertook it. Indeed, he is most unjust, most ignorant. The Quranic perspective is very clear. You are going in to this world as a trustee, someone as a vice regent, someone who is to represent God on earth. You have no other function apart from this main function. Every other thing given to you and awarded to you is subservient to this understanding of your responsibility. If you are understanding this responsibility, you are considered from the point of view of Quran as serving the purpose of your being sent in this world. Otherwise, from the Quranic perspective, you are enjoying your life by what has been given to you to fulfill the trust. So therefore, you would be getting away from the main purpose and you would be taking paths which are not the path for which God has created you, and they will lead you astray, and those who are led astray will have an end which is not, according to Quran, a very pleasing one. So we are here now with this trust which has been given to us. The strength of these words is very, very, very important. It goes very clearly. We presented, we gave the trust to the heavens and the earth and the mountains. Obviously, the trust is a big thing from what is being told. We have presented it. We indeed presented the trust to the heavens and the earth and the mountains. They refused to bear it and were apprehensive. It was something so important that they, despite their size, the physical aspect of it, the heavens, the earth and the mountains, three huge physically recognizable things to the human being. This is a figurative expression of the importance of the trust, the amana. The most visible physical things to man, the heaven, the earth and the mountains, have been given it and they have said, no, we don't want it, and are apprehensive, are fearful of taking it and accepting it. And man accepts it. Hamalah al-insan, human beings have accepted it, are bearing it, are carrying it. So what is this which the Quran is speaking of? It is very, very obvious that when we speak of the soul, and referring to the earlier verses of the Quran, where God has said, Tabarakallahu ahsanul khaliqin, after creating mankind, greatest is the Lord, the best creator is the Lord, Why? After the final giving of the soul to the human body. ثُمَّ جَعَلْنَاهُ خَلْقًا آخر. We have made him into a different creation altogether. We did hint towards this point that the infinite difference between man, between humans and all other animals with whom we share the whole history of life on earth. Sharing, as mentioned earlier, more than 98% of DNA with the chimpanzees. But the difference is infinite. And for an infinite difference, you require a cause for that infinite difference. The cause for that infinite difference is the consciousness, the soul which has been bestowed upon us. The soul which has been given to us, which has made us as a result of being given the soul by God, something infinitely superior to everything and obviously capable of carrying the amana, capable of accepting the trust. Something so big that the earth, the mountains and the heavens felt apprehensive about, were fearful about and were not willing to accept it. So what is it in us that makes us bigger than the heavens, bigger than the earth, bigger than the mountains, or more capable? If I use the word bigger, would give only a physical sense. What I mean to say, bigger in the real sense of accepting the amana. So we are capable of accepting it. The Quran in another verse mentions antum ashaddu khalqan amis sama banaha. Are you more stronger than the heavens which we have fashioned? Here it is telling man that, remember, physically the heavens are stronger and bigger than you, more firm than you. We have made them. But there is something in you, if you realize that it is not your physical strength, not your mental strength, it is the strength of your soul which makes you bigger or more capable than anything else in the eyes of God, and therefore the best of creation. We became the best of creation because we were having a soul, and our soul has that ability to be able to continually absorb ideas which are behind the physical creation. I want your attention. The soul's greatness is that it can absorb and understand things which have gone behind the creation, which the human being sees within him and outside of him. He feels his body, he feels his heart beating, he feels his mind working, he feels his ears and eyes and nose, and the sense of touch operating, everything he feels within him and outside him as well. Causes for that, reasons for that, how the ghaib has been fashioned, it is only man's capability, human capability, to go behind and lift the veil of the unseen. In the last lecture I did hint towards the fact, yuminuna bil ghaib. They have faith in the unseen. The faith in the unseen cannot be on conjecture, it has to be on the basis of knowledge. So they have the knowledge of the unseen. That is what makes a human being a human being, in the sense that the physical is incapable of understanding the physical. The physical is incapable of understanding the physical. It can take a picture of it. We have it in the MRIs and the CTs and the X-rays and the ultrasounds, all these things which we can determine diseases from. We can put it into a computer, it will give you a detailed expression of what it is, but the question of whether it is true or false comes back to the human being comes back to understanding of the human being who is going to take that report and interpret it. Even if you take it into artificial intelligence, the final fact that whether the process of the intelligence which has been completed is the human factor. Truth, justice are the areas of human being where nothing can be brought forward to replace it. You can get better tools to understand things, but whether something understood is true or false is a human judgment. The judgment part of the human being, the capability of his to say this is right and this is wrong, straight away goes to the domain of the soul. And if the soul doesn't work properly there, and that is the reason where the Quran says the fasad, the turmoil starts. So what is the amanat now is a big question which we need to answer. The amanat given by God to us is very simple. The trust given to God by God to us is very simple. It is basically the ability to externalize the word of God, the idea of God, the creation of God, to make physical God's ideas. God is a sublime reality. It interacts through the soul, and the soul, by accepting God's wisdom, knowledge, through the prophets and the book, comes into the domain of the physical and starts fashioning the physical with the will of God. Starts fashioning the physical with the will of God. And in fashioning the physical, the question of developing societies, making laws, providing systems of justice, all fall in place. Therefore, that verse of the Quran which I quoted earlier, surely we have sent all our prophets, our apostles, with clear proofs, and have sent with them the book and the balance, a system, so that human beings may uphold justice, mankind may uphold justice. This becomes the amana part, the trust part of human being. Their ability to absorb knowledge, get to facts, use those facts with what God wants them to do, that it push them on the path of truth and justice. Justice at the level of what we would call criminal justice, and at the level of what we would call social justice. So from the domain of this physical aspect, you are starting to give the physical world a meaning through the soul, through your consciousness. So this is the trust. You have that ability to absorb knowledge from all sides, from your observation, through the book, through the prophets. So you have few books to read. You read the book of nature, you read the book of yourself, then you read the book of God. And then you start moving on the path of God, fulfilling what He wants you to fulfill through keeping your soul pure so that it is capable of understanding better and acting in that direction. If the soul is put in a state of impurity, one, it won't absorb the real knowledge. The second, it will, after absorbing, not be able to follow up on it, what we would call akratic ability to accept the truth, but inability to put it in practice. That's what akratic means. You know the truth, but you don't have the will to put it into practice. So the weakening of the soul leads to both these things. One, there is a kind of an impediment to understanding of facts. Second, after understanding, ability to act upon them in accordance to what we have understood. Here it is that the idea, as I had mentioned, that after the ghaib, the idea of prayer comes in. يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْغَيْبِ وَيُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةَ. Once you get more knowledge, you need to move forward on the path of salat So that the salat, according to what the Quran says, inna salata tanhan al fahsha'i wal munkar, surely prayer stops you from acts of sinfulness and indecency. Acts of sinfulness and indecency. So when you are in the state of salat, you are able to get into a pure zone. Once you are getting into the pure zone, the ability of yours to accept facts at all levels. What are the physical levels? At the level of understanding yourself, what you yourself are, that is getting a better idea of your own soul. So it's just not the physical understanding, the mental understanding. It is the understanding of your own soul. So a person who is capable of purifying himself through salah, through prayer, will be able to slowly move in that direction where his pure soul will have a better understanding of the physical laws as well as the laws of the spirit, the soul and his consciousness. Once these two states come in together, he slowly starts feeling that what he has is more or not. If I feel whatever I have is less, I will be niggardly. I will be miserly. I will stop things from being put in that direction. Though I might have a lot, but I will not feel the need of others because my soul has been limited by my way of looking at the world without the lens of purity which is given by salat. So the salat becomes the first step, and then you move on to the next steps, which the verse of Surah Baqarah says, which we had hinted to but we had not elaborated it. So here it goes. So the salat comes, and then the infaq part comes. You feel that somebody else wants it and needs it more, and I don't want it. How can I say I don't want it? Maybe after 50 years, I might require that. Maybe after 100 years, you might require that. Or maybe my children would require. Or maybe not my children, maybe their children would require that. So how does the mind work? It works of securing not yourself, but yourself after 50 years. And then if not that, your children and their children. So we go into a path of totally utilizing ourselves in the narrowest possible way. Me and my family. But we got everything which we have got in the form of physical wealth or anything through a process of the society. The society created wealth. I took it, added some value to it, and the society gave it back to me. And then what do I give back to society is what the government taxes me. That is again, as I would say, a part of a narrow interpretation, because taxation is for everybody. Those who believe in God, those who don't believe in God, those who believe in religion, those who don't believe in religion. What is the difference of a soul capable of understanding God, its own self, its capacity to deliver the amana, the trust, the way God has made him to do, and then starts failing in that? Quran has a lot of verses. Surely man is a greedy person. There's so many. He loves wealth like anything. Innahu li hubbil khayri la shadid. Why does Quran say that? The Quran says it from the point of view of the pure soul. Because if the Quran says this and it doesn't mean anything to us, where is the guidance for? Why is the Quran guiding us? The Quran guides us basically because we don't know what the pure soul says. And therefore, a lot of comments of the Quran are what we would be saying had we purified ourselves. And that is the verse of the Quran, وَمَا يَنْتِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَىٰ إِنْ هُوَىٰ إِلَّا وَهْيُوِ يُوْهَىٰ. The Prophet doesn't speak by his own accord. And out of his own selfish self. But instead, it is a revelation given to him. In huwa illa wahyui yuha, a revelation which is being given to him, revealed to him. This is the fundamental fact of why the Quran says that the Prophet doesn't speak from hawa-e nafs, the greed of the soul, which incapable of understanding its quality of purity and pureness, starts working under the forces of nature, of hormones, of physical desires, and therefore pollutes itself. Khad aflaha man zakkaha runs in that direction. Surely he has succeeded who has purified it. Wakhad khaba man dassaha. He has destroyed it, covered it up. He has destroyed it, covered it up, has lost. So success and loss are being put in a clear format. Failure is because the nafs had not been purified, and success is the opposite of it. Let us now move on towards another reality which is in consonance with the verse Innal arazna amanata. There is a verse in the Quran where God says, وَمَا خَلَقُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لَيَعْبُدُونَ. I did not create the jinn and the humans except that they may worship me. Now what does this mean? I have not created neither the jinn nor the ins, the humans, except that they may worship him. That is only purpose of my creation of human beings and jinn, is that they worship me. Why is it so? Why is it so? These are verses which people can get doubt about. Why is it so? Why should we not do any other thing? And what does God mean by we have not created man or the jinn except for the fact that they should worship him? So the reason is very simple, very plain. Whatever things we have as being part of the animal kingdom, to the extent of the quality of a mother, of any mother in the animal world, to protect its child and love it the way it loves the child. What I had just mentioned in the question and answers, the mamta part of it, the love and affection part of it, the strength and the will to fight for saving the baby from any harm at all, attacking very strong and bigger animals than itself, when you look in the animal kingdom, to see to it that the baby is protected, the young one is looked after. This kind of affection, this kind of love in animals is part of our animal nature. You can just imagine the highest quality of love, which is the mother's love for the child in the animal kingdom, is not the part of the soul. It is part of our being animal. God has moved through the physical process and brought these qualities in the domain of the physical, where the soul is not involved, the consciousness is not involved. This is not based on knowledge at all. It's part of the physical creation of God. Our love for our children is again within the domain of the physical nature. In animals, they do it their way, we do it our way. It is not the duty of the soul. It's not something given to us as a result of our soul. So now we understand even the family relationships which we are creating, sustaining, strengthening, are all as a result of our being part of the animal kingdom. The role of our with consciousness bestowed upon us is something much, much more superior. And therefore this verse, I have not created the jinn and humans except that they worship me. So the duty, the purpose of the soul is only the worship of God and accepting his commands and delivering it into the physical world. That is the physicalization of God's will through choice, through being a trustee, through being a vice regent or a vice gerent. These are the things which we are now supposed to deliver. Much above what is there from filial point of view, which is available to all animals. The mother's love is part of the animal kingdom domain. The father's affection is part of the animal kingdom. The love for the family and the flock is part of the animal kingdom domain. All these are falling into that domain. We need, through our consciousness, move it up to a level which would be serving God, and therefore only and only thing for which the soul has been created is for the amana part, to give and fulfill the trust. And in this sense God says that He is the greatest of creators. Tabarakallahu ahsanul khaliqin. Therefore now it is a creation in motion. What is the soul? It's a creation in motion. It doesn't get fixed to anything. It is able to absorb from God anytime it wants and deliver anytime it wants. The ability to absorb from God through the hovering of the soul on matter, on the mind, or in itself. Three areas which I spoke of: the book of nature, the book of the self, the physical part, and then the conscious part. And apart from that, the book of God. So you start taking knowledge from all sides and putting it into action. No other being is capable of doing it day in and day out. Day in and day out. Moving into one domain after another. And therefore, when we look at the prophets, the imams, we are astonished how they were able to achieve what they were able to achieve. The knowledge of this world, the knowledge of this, the laws of the world, the knowledge of the self, the knowledge of God Himself. What we get in the prayers of the Prophet and the Imam, and the prayers which have been given to us in the Quran of many prophets, a lot of prophets, how they prayed to God has been mentioned in the Quran. There is the prayer of Ibrahim. There are so many other prayers. So we come to a point where we are now in that very simple, clear area of what we have been created for. What have we been created for? It is something very strange maybe. But if we go deep into ourselves, we will only find this as our purpose of creation. All other things are either a support or an impediment. A support or a hurdle. And therefore those verses of the Quran where wealth, family, wife, children, and the good things of this world, even the good things of this world, are considered to be a fitna and something which has been given to examine us, something which has been given to test us, and not something which is per se good in itself. Money is not good in itself. Family is not good in itself. Our strength, physical, mental, is not good in itself. It is not. It is neutral. It is not good. Nor is it bad. Now, with this ability of ours, of managing wealth, managing the family, managing our social relationship, this domain needs to be totally dictated by the soul as it starts taking in information after information, knowledge after knowledge, as a result of purifying itself continuously through prayer and worship, and then delivering at the level of managing the family, at the level of having social relations, at the level of managing money. Innamal mu'minuna ikhwa, says the Quran. The mu'mineen, the faithful, are nothing but brothers amongst themselves. How does it say that and why does it say that? In another verse, It says, O Prophet, had you spent the wealth of this world, لَوْ أَنْفَقْتَ مَا فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا, total wealth of this world, O Prophet, had you spent it, you would not be able to bring their hearts together. We have brought their hearts together, says the Quran. On what principle? The principle of the soul. The principle of the soul. They came to us, we purified this soul. They came more to us, we purified it to a higher level. They came on, and we started giving on. The coming was infinite, and therefore the giving was infinite. The word used is awwab, he who turns continuously towards God in the Quran. A lot of prophets have been given this title by the Quran. Continuously going. But you need to know towards which thing you are going. The love of God, the love of God should be the defining quality of the soul. وَالَّذِينَ آمُنُوا أَشَدُّ حُبًّا لِلَّهِ, those who have faith have a very powerful, strong, great love of God. أَشَدُّ حُبًّا, you can say powerful, strong. Connect with God. That is what Iman does. It connects us, our souls to God, and our souls become, through God, a continually growing or diminishing entity. Growing for those who are taking the guidance and diminishing for those who are refusing it. That is the difference between a mu'min and a kafir. Who takes it continually is a mu'min continually. Who takes it at times and doesn't take it at time and refuses to take it at time would be partially a mu'min, partially a kafir, and who doesn't take it at all would be a kafir completely, the ungrateful. Kafir means basically ungrateful. When they started directly opposing the Prophet, this was the word used against them. Kufr otherwise means nothing but ungratefulness. So what God was telling through the Prophet, they were rejecting it. So they were being ungrateful. Imma shakira wa imma kafura. Kufr is opposite shukr. Shukr is gratefulness. If you are grateful, it's up to you. If you are ungrateful, it's imma shakira wa imma kafura, says the Quran again. So with this we are weaving a clear picture of how things move in the direction of God, and how the Quran just makes you look completely focused at the reality of your creation, and through that space towards God. You understand your soul as being created only to worship God, and then you want to move towards God more and more, because the object of your love and affection should be something which is the object of your creation. So this comes together. This coming together from one side, and you are getting more and more knowledge of the ghaib, the unseen laws of this universe, both inside you and outside you. As the Quran says, we will be showing you our signs within you and outside you, till it becomes clear that this is real, this is truth. This goes on, and this knowledge of the ghaib, the unseen, when it accumulates in a big collection of ghaib, the Quran would say ghuyub, the plural, and when you look at all of the laws of the ghaib, they start pointing you towards a higher ghaib, which is what the Quran says, وَبِالْآخِرَةِ هُمْ يُوْقِنُونَ, in those beginning verses of the verse Al-Baqarah, that they are sure of the Akhirah. They have yaqeen of the Akhirah. How did they come to that yaqeen? Slow progress. And looking at the ghaib, understanding it, and feeling that these laws, which we are capable of understanding and applying in the world, is what is to be done as an amana, as a trust, and in that doing we would be tested. If we do it properly, we would be rewarded, and if we don't do it properly, we would be asked why. Why? The question of why has been very powerfully put in the Quran. وَالْمَعُودَةُ سُعِلَتْ بِأَيِّ زَنْبٍ قُتِلَتْ, the girl's child which was buried on birth would be asked, for what sin of hers was she buried? Nothing is going to be missed, says the Quran. There are so many verses in this direction. Nothing, big or small, will be missed. And it will be all in a book. So, we will slowly be coming into the domain of understanding the Akhirah. Therefore, the soul would be able to say, all this world is created and we have become the trustees over everything that we survey. And in the event of our not being there, this creation wouldn't mean anything. The meaning of the creation is the human soul. The purpose of the creation is the human soul. That is what is important, and we need to understand that. We can say that we are nothing. We are more evolved monkeys. We can say that. But the proofs are not pointing towards that. The proofs are pointing towards God on one side, and again on God in the form of Akhirah on other side. In the world, we have freedom and we go towards God. And once we become His servants, Ab, and then move again towards Him. Therefore, He becomes the first and He becomes the last. Wal awwalu wal akhiru wa zahiru wa batin. From the obvious, we see Him. And from what is not seen, we see Him. So, He is seen inside, He is seen outside. Somebody you see inside will be only seen inside, will not be seen outside. God's greatness is that He'll be seen inside, He'll be seen outside. Wal zahiru wal batin, because He's the obvious as well as that which is in the batin. This is the way the Quran brings us to a clear understanding of our role in this world. And as we move forward and forward on this, the yaqeen, the truth of it, the confidence in it, becomes more and more, and through from that we move into another domain where God's will starts becoming so obvious that a person feels that anything he is giving to God is worth nothing. Everything he is giving to God is worth nothing. Because what he wants now from God is not something from God, but God himself. He wants nothing from God. He wants God himself. And God is willing to give that. God is willing to give that. If you can give yourself wholly to God, God is willing to give himself wholly to you. The higher individuals, the prophets, the imams, work towards that end. And therefore we see them calling to God the way they do in their prayers, in their du'as. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Quite a few questions in my mind, but there were some questions that I had received through the emails, which I just wanted to clear up relating to your previous talks. And I'm sure today's lecture will probably generate some more questions. So let me just go through some of these very quickly. We talked about the role of fitra in faith. And we talked about the covenant that we all did before coming into this world. So why is the strength of this covenant relatively different in individuals and non-existent in atheists and agnostics? If we all have the same fitra, why is the strength of that fitra different? Well, that's one question.
Yeah, I did get that question. The very fact that fitra is something which is a constant in everybody, irrespective of his IQ. Irrespective of his IQ. Because what happens with human beings is they are born to parents, and the parents are the ones who they want to emulate. They want to follow them. Language is learned through that same process. This is very, very specific for human beings. So the ability to replicate and reproduce what the parents are doing is just not limited to the world of language. It extends beyond that into the world of behavior. So now when they see their parents worshipping gods, it is very difficult for them to question that this is wrong. The verse, Alastu bi Rabbikum, Qalu Bala, has come on this basis only, that we have taken a covenant from you before we sent you here, so that you may not come back and say that we saw our parents do it and we were just following them. So there is a calling from inside. When a person does that, that he doesn't have a proof. So he lives everything with a proof and does something without a proof. The fitra would be something which would be always asking the proof. So if he stops asking for a proof and just starts following them, that is where we say he is not acting according to fitra, because the fitra would ask him to move on the basis of knowledge. If there is a dark room, ask anybody to just look into it. He says, well, there could be something in it, there could be furniture in it, I'd be hitting the furniture and falling down and hurt myself. I will go, but I'll tread with caution. Once somebody says that he would be treading with caution, in every small thing it will hurt him what? Nothing. A little bruise somewhere. But when it comes to the society and worshipping something which is totally not having a base at all, there we find that he is not acting according to fitra. The fitra would ask him to ask questions everywhere. That is the fitra. Ask questions. And now he is not asking questions. So if the fitra is something which doesn't believe in getting knowledge, we would not be so clear about asking questions and learning through questions. And some places we think are unquestionable. Even in our faith, there are so many things which are going unquestioned, and therefore at every point where the faith is going unquestioned, it is a pseudo-faith. It is a pseudo-faith. It is not real faith. Real faith always has a question. Real faith always has a question and will be only satisfied when it is getting answered. لا تقفو ما ليس لك به علم, says the Quran. Do not follow that of which you have no knowledge. And knowledge comes through asking questions. And if you are not asking questions for each behavior of yours or others, yours as well, because anybody can ask you why you are doing this and you won't have an answer, that is not your fitra. You will cringe. You will cringe. The very fact that you are cringing is that there is a fitra. Every atheist will cringe when asked why is he feeling that there is no God. There is no reason for him. There is no proof for proving that there is no God. And everybody accepts it. Even the atheists accept it. The agnostics accept it. There is no proof that there is God. The only thing that you can say is, well, we don't know. We are agnostic. That means that there is somebody as powerful as we are. Right? Everything works according to a particular plan, doesn't harm anything. The animal kingdom, leave alone mankind, has a perfect existence and can keep on continuing to exist. We have come in, destroyed the flora and the fauna. Maybe more than 400 mammals during this period of our growing, maybe during the last few hundred years, have gone extinct. All of us. Hundreds of species of birds have gone extinct or on the verge of extinction. The glaciers and everything is going out. The environment is being destroyed. And I say, I have no commitment to it. I have the power to do it, so I am doing it. We had a recent president, who still is the president, at least the acting president, who was denying climate change, was saying nothing doing, And there are people on the other side with proofs telling us that if we continue for another 50 years in this manner, there will be a point of no coming back. We will not be able to redeem what we have lost. Already we are losing things every day. Quality of life is going from bad to worse. People's greed is multiplying by the day. All this just because, as the Quran says, Zahara al-fasadu fil barri wal bahri bima kasabat aydin nas. There will be turmoil, destruction, fasad in the world, basically as a result of what human beings do with their hands. We are destroying this world with our own hands and therefore and are saying that we are not responsible for it. This is the height of challenging fitrah, because we have no reason to say this is not true. So I think the fitrah is there and the fitrah doesn't get vanished. You put a question and the very fact that he doesn't have an answer would be a reason for him to say, well, I need to think. So I think the agnostic and the atheist need to think about what they are doing and why they are doing it. And as I told you in the earlier part as well, a few lines drawn in front of us. The only problem is the atom was not built in front of us. We were not designed in front of us. Otherwise, three lines put in a parallel manner, exactly 6 feet and with 1 foot apart, would make us understand that somebody sensible has done it. But the things of what the atom is, how it is working, how the neutrons and the protons and the electrons are moving in a particular direction, as the Quran says, everything, there is not a thing in this whole universe except that it calls God, worships God, prays to God, but that we don't understand it. So now that we have been able to understand that dead matter is not dead matter, it has a life of its own, and all these things are there, why are we not trying to accept the fact that if we something is drawn, when we come into a room and three lines are there, we say, no, there is intelligence here. There is no intelligence in this elaborate world of extraordinary intelligence. Extraordinary, I mean, the word extraordinary is also too small a word. Beyond ordinary, beyond extraordinary, everything you can call it. You can just feel it if you don't call it. If you are not feeling it, if somebody is blind and says that nothing exists apart from darkness, the problem is with the blind person. The soul goes blind. And the reason again, those who are not blind and whose soul was really, really active, see what they have done in human history. They have elevated mankind to higher levels of behavior and conduct. And therefore, I think there is very little doubt about the fact that the fitrah exists. It's being trampled upon. Had it been a compulsion, the fitrah of the angels is a compulsion. They have been created in a state of compulsion. They do the will of God. The whole universe is being managed by them. Well, mudabbirat amra, says the Quran, those who manage the affairs. Hinting it towards, very obviously, towards angels. So if the angels are there, they do from a spiritual point a physical function. We do it from a physical point, a spiritual function. But they are compelled and we are free. The free will of ours makes us capable of being prostrated by the angels. They prostrate before us, and therefore the reason is they do it as a compulsion, we do it as a free will. So anything having the will of God and free to execute it or not, and will be executing it, that soul is being made the center for the angels to bend down to prostrate to. That is the fundamental factor. The fitrah is there very, very clear.
Thank you, Mujahid. Thank you very much. Alhamdulillah. One more question is about, you mentioned it in this talk as well, about how the human consciousness is there to judge the truth or justice. Adil. So the question actually is about Adil. Adil is part of our Usul-e-Deen. And the question is, were these usul-e-deen codified during the time of the Prophet and the Imams, or was it done later?
Yeah. See, the codification of the usul-e-deen is basically from a pedagogical point of view. It's because we want to teach people certain things. The Quran in different surahs, different chapters, has spoken about the oneness of God, monotheism, not having partners. So Tawheed becomes very, very clear. Adl came as a difference of opinion between different schools of theology. The Asharites were saying that whatever God tells us is justice, and whatever God doesn't tell us is not justice. That is, if we say this is wrong, it is wrong. If we say this is right, it is right. We are not the ones to determine it. The Mu'tazila and the Shias, the Imamiyas, said that no, we have been given the capability by God to judge what is good and what is bad, and therefore we have the capacity as a result of our intellect to do it. This was the difference. We were being called the Adliya, and therefore the word Adl came into our Usul-e-Deen, that we feel that human beings have the capacity of understanding what is good and what is bad. The word used in the theological verses, husno hubhe akhli. Anything which is good or bad can be determined through the intelligence, intellect of the human being. They said nothing doing. Humans are incapable of that. God says this is good, this is bad. This is good, this is bad. For example, if God sends XYZ who has tortured or killed a prophet or an imam to heaven, they say, well, he can do that and that would be Adl. We say that God, through the fact that he has given us the intelligence and intellect, he has made us capable of saying that God will not do such a thing. That is not making God or compelling God to do what we want to do, but through the knowledge he has given, we can tell that God doesn't do like this. He will not reward a sinner and will punish a person who has refrained from sinning and has done good deeds. So they know this is not there. So this is more of a technical kind of thing. So Adl goes to the corner. Today we don't have that argument. So we can move from Tawheed to Nabuwat to Imamat and then to Qiyamat. This is very simple. Tawheed becomes the base, monotheism, no polytheism, no worshipping of idols. Then from that, Nabuwat. Nabuwat gives you the laws. The Quran says a lot of things you don't know, a lot of things you need to learn from us. For example, the Quran says, how do you know who is more beneficial to you when it speaks of inheritance? I spoken this in the earlier part. The fact that some person, a male generally, is more closer to the family because the daughter generally leaves the family to become another center of a family to move and work there as a mother and create a new home. So the work of a mother is part of the work of the other family, and the work of the boy is the work of the family itself. So here it is that the percentage has been changed depending upon the benefit accruing to the person who is inheriting and the person who is the owner of it, from whom the inheritance is coming, the heritage is coming. So these are very simple facts which we need to learn, that we will not be able to determine who gets what. God is able to do that because he has more knowledge and we cannot have this knowledge. Put 100 people with different capabilities, very scholarly, very well read, and tell them to distribute a particular amount where the parents are also there of the person who is deceased, and the children, wife, brothers, sisters, and you see that there would be 100 different solutions and no one would be having proof for why it has to be like that. So God says, where you are not guided, I'll guide you, specifically in the area of lawmaking in inheritance, laws of marriage, in areas of criminal justice, where the Quran says, lakum fil hayate, Lakum fil khisasi hayatun ya ulil albab. Oh, people with intelligence, in retribution you have life. In retribution, you have life. If you don't, the strong will kill the weak and will make laws to the benefit of the strong. And those who have lost their near and dear one will not be able to hold that person after being proved that he has killed a father, a son, or anybody responsible, and determine the retributive justice which the Quran says should be in the hands of the kin of the person who has been killed. Because they are the ones who suffer. They are the ones who have lost a father, a mother, a son, a daughter. So this is what justice is all about. The person who has lost should be given the power after the proof is done to whether accept blood money or ask for retribution. So Quran works in a particular manner, and if that is properly executed, there will not be killing, and therefore the killing not being there, the Quran says lakum fil khisasi hayatun, you have life in the principle of retribution, O people who ponder and think. This is the way it is. So we look at it from this. Now that Nabuwwat is there, Imamat comes as a result of executing the laws after the Prophet. And during the time of the Prophet, while executing the laws, the Prophet will be called the Imam, as Abraham was called the Imam in the Quran. And the Prophet was the Imam during his lifetime in the period of his rule in Medina. And then the continuation of Imamat is the extension of Nabuwwat in the path of Adl. On the path of Adl, when Nabuwwat moves, therefore there is Imamat. And again, there we have proof of this in the verses of the Quran, 124 Surah Baqara, where Abraham asks that will the Imamat will be there in his Zurriya, progeny, children. So that comes for the Imamat part. And the Qiyamat is obviously, as I told you, all things move towards the direction that if the soul has moved to a higher level, the world is not the place to reward it. It's not possible. Automatically, as an equation, it will follow. As an equation, it will follow. If all this ghaib added together, and it will become Qiyamat. Add the ghaib, add the efforts of the soul, understanding the ghaib and moving, having faith in God who is not visible, but searching through the intellect, through all this, so that God looks obvious to it, the zahir to it, the batin to it, the first to it, the last to it, then somebody who has not seen God at all, somebody has seen it as the first and the last, the Zahir and the Batin, both will not be on the same plane. And where would that plane be? That plane would be the Qiyamah. Ashabul Maimana, wa Ashabul Mashama. Those on the right side and those on the cursed side. So that would make the Qiyamah part. So very four things can be very clearly explained. Adl came as a theological debate and was given significance during that period of time because a lot of intellectual activity was dependent upon this issue of Husn-e Khub-e Akhli. Therefore it came in, but now I think it's not required at all. It doesn't mean that the Ahle Sunnah or the Asharites among them say that basically God doesn't do justice. No, it's all filled up in the Quran that God is not a zalim. He doesn't do a little zul. That's what the Quran says. So nobody says that God is a zalim, but the interpretation of what adalat is, what justice is, had a bit of a problem, which again, as I told you, now we don't have any serious contention in that area. Even the Asharites would be agreeing to this. And so I think the other part of it can be taken to be a theological issue.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mujahid. Because I think, as you said, your intelligence, our intelligence is also God-given. And the Quran is also God-given. So the sources for both are divine. And as I read, I think in one book, it said that God hasn't asked you to do anything which goes against your God-given logic. So your akhl actually is there, your intelligence is there, which resonates with whatever has come through the Quran. So whatever the revelation is, your akhl usku, you know, accepts it and submits to it. Anyway, I just wanted to add that comment. There's three small questions, but I think they're all related to the same thing. I'll just spell those out. Why does the soul doesn't work properly? How do we lose or acquire trust? And the reasons for the weakening of the soul.
Can you repeat it, Raman? Just repeat the last sentence.
Why does the soul doesn't work properly? How do we lose or... Sorry, shall I repeat? Shall I repeat it again? Why does the soul doesn't work properly?
How do the soul?
heart. How do we lose or acquire trust? And reasons for weakening of the soul, for lacking the trust.
I think a bit of it has been explained during this lecture.
Wow.
Don't you feel so? Has not some of it been explained during this lecture of ours, the issue of the soul, why it is at times not capable of doing what it should do, basically the lack of knowledge, and at times being acratic, as I told, not willing to put that knowledge into practice, and yes, as a result of that, being in one way more possessed of the physical side of our creation, as the Quran says, يَعْلَمُونَ ظَاهِرَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا وَهُمْ عَنِ الْآخِرَةِ هُمْ غَافِلُونَ. Right, they know the life of this world, but regarding the akhira, they are among the ghafileen, those who are in oblivion, those who are forgetful. So there is a kind of emphasis in all of us that what is visible to us at stage one, we feel it to be the best thing that is possible. And the next thing, which could be better than what we know, would become more and more distant to us. But that is more beneficial. And I had mentioned this very, very earlier itself, that we started moving from the idea of common sense towards something, because the common sense said that the sun rises and the sun sets, but we were capable of understanding that no, this doesn't work that way. So we made the sun the center of the solar system, and the earth lost its primacy in that sense after a lot of fight with the clergy. So then I said that we have to move more forward, where we go into the area of being counterintuitive, something which is obvious, very, very obvious, doesn't seem to work at the quantum level. For example, if I am traveling in a jeep open with a ball in my hand, and the jeep is traveling at 20 kilometers an hour, and I throw the ball at 20 kilometers an hour, the ball will obviously go in front. That means it's traveling faster than what I am traveling, and I've thrown it at the speed of 20, so that will be traveling at the speed of 40. But when somebody traveling at the speed of electricity fires an electron, the electron should be at the double the speed. One which it is going at the speed of electricity, and that electron fired should go at a higher speed. But it doesn't. It will be the same thing. This is totally counterintuitive to us. This has been proved. So once you start going, it gets even more difficult at times to understand things, but all of our growth is coming as a result of that. Our inability to understand dimensions more than the four dimensions. We won't be able to grow in our sciences if we do only a four-dimensional work. As I told you, string theory moves into 11 dimensions or even 21 dimensions. So when we are looking at things, we have to add things much more unseen in our calculations, and we are capable of doing that. So what we now need to know, that what we are being exposed to in this present time, and depending on what our physical interpretation of the world was in the earlier times, therefore I am telling, when we are trying to understand religion in the contemporary world, we are having much more reason to be religion than being irreligious. Earlier, maybe 150-100 years ago, there was bigger reason for not to be religious, because the kind of science which was there was not pointing towards that. But during the last 200 years, the kind of work done in physics and mathematics and even in chemistry has taken us beyond that pale and has shown the intricacies of the creation, which would be totally impossible for a person even 50 odd years ago to be able to say it is like that. We had an idea of an eternal universe. Today we say, no, it's a big bang. 50 years odd ago, it was not that. Cosmic radiation.
Yeah.
Which we were able to find out, gave us this clear proof, but first it came out in a theory, then it came out as a fact in itself. We were able to observe it. So this is what we are now. Things, we come to it before we actually find it. Then we find it. So the intellect runs further than the physical identifying. You take antimatter for itself. Antimatter was part of a basic equation But the person who discovered it a few years later had not known that equation. So, the equation was written earlier and the physical proof of it came later. Higgs boson, latest arrival. Higgs boson was basically a 1960 odd particle which had to be in the standard model. It was not found. It was found in 2012 or something. So, we are getting more and more into the physical through our ability to understand the physical in a better way and our ability to get and find the ghaib theoretically and then practically. This is the greatest part of the human intellect. And capability of that is what God has created. And through this creation and continually increasing, all animals are in a state of the same kind. 1,000-year-old, 1,500-year-old, 1.5 million-year-old monkey of the same species is the same. Is doing no great things. But what about human beings 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago? There is a big difference. This capability of continuous growth is what God is speaking of and continually fashioning it into the direction of goodness is what is expected of this universe. This universe at the end of time will not be a tragedy. It would be a denouement where the good will be able to conquer the evil. Inna al-arza yarisuha ibadiya salihun, says the Quran. This world, its inheritors would be the righteous servants of God. Inna al-arza yarisuha ibadiya, my righteous servant, says the God. And that my needs to be taken care of.
So another question about ghaib has come through the chat. The question is, can you please amplify what you understand by ghaib? Is this the same as God's names? Is the ghaib linked to God's names? That's the question, basically. Acha.
The God's names are basically what we understand of God in His different functions which He performs. Those names come from that. Some of them are result of His acts. And some of them are the result of His own existence, such as life. Hay is part of Him. Hayyum, part of Him. Self-sustaining, part of Him. He doesn't need to create something to be self-sustaining. He doesn't need to create something. But when we speak of Razak, sustainer, right? That He sustains things is the name which is given to Him or extracted or understood from it. So what we are speaking about names is not, I am speaking about the fact that behind the obvious, which all animals see, and we also see as animals, our capability to move towards God is a result of our finding things which are more detailed than what obviously animals would like to see. I'll just give you how Quran actually moved forward on this path. I wanted to speak on this in this lecture itself, but I was short of time. Yeah. Chapter 88, verses 17 to 20. Surah Al-Ghashiyah. أَفَلَا يَنْزُرُونَ إِلَى الْإِبِلِ كَيْفَ خُلِقَتْ وَإِلَى السَّمَاءِ كَيْفَ رُفِعَتْ وَإِلَى الْجَبَالِ كَيْفَ نُصِبَتْ وَإِلَى الْأَرْضِ كَيْفَ سُطِحَتْ. These are the verses. Do they not observe the camel, how she has been created, and the sky, how it has been raised, and the mountains, how they have been set, and the earth, how it has been surfaced? So these are the things which God wants us. These are the earlier chapters which came during the period of the prophet in Makkah. So they are Makkan surahs. So here it is very, very clear that He says, observe the camel, because that was the most obvious thing which the Arabs had to see, and God wants you to observe that. Then he asks you to observe the sky, which again, then the mountains, which were all there around Makkah and even they are today, and the world, earth. They could go out and see the expanse in the desert, how we have spread it. So, the Quran starts by taking man's gaze out from just the consumerist part of him, consumption part of him, which all animals do. They search their food and identify it. But looking at the camel with that eye is not what God is saying. Look at the camel, how to ride it, how to milk it. No, that is not what God is saying. Because the verse next, how the skies, the heavens have been raised. So all this is done with the intention of making man focus towards, and the Quran, as you see, takes it up to our higher levels. I spoke about the verses regarding the movement of the mountains. It seems to you that they are stationary, but they are actually moving like the clouds are moving. Or this verse on gravitation, we hold the heavens through a process, through pillars, which you are not capable of seeing. So God is taking you actually into that domain, first by just seeing, like the camel or the mountains or the earth or the heavens, then slowly getting you into the fact that there are more things in a manner which are not just visible to you, like the moving of the mountains, like the gravitational force. All this, when spoken to you, is not that God wants to tell you something for the sake of knowledge. It is a guidance. That God is not flaunting His knowledge to you. He is not flaunting His creation to you. He is asking you and me to think and ponder. There are 741 times that the Quran says, think, ponder. Different words are used. Tafakkur, tadabbur, ta'akkul. Everything is being used just to make human beings think more and more. 741 times. So we now need to understand that the purpose of all this ghaib and hinting towards this for us to know and understand and move towards it. And as I told you, in what we are doing by creating mathematics as a human created science, trying to get and find the ghaib in equations which, when they are understood, are being confirmed later by the fact that something which was already there has been seen. Neptune, for example, was a result of a movement which they used to see, I think in Plato, where they thought that this movement should not be there unless there is a body. But we couldn't see Neptune because it was too small then. So later it came to be seen when we developed higher and better telescopes. So all this comes in a very, very, very different manner, and the ghaib needs to be understood in that manner. Names of God are what we understand of God through whatever He does in the form of sifat-e failia and in the form of what He has intrinsically, sifatus zatiya. So this is something separate from that, and the ghaib is basically that which we are able to inquire into through a process of proof and basically based on facts and on the basis of knowledge, not on the basis of conjecture. The difference could be very easily understood between astronomy and astrology. Astrology is basically conjecture and astronomy is basically science. So what God wants us is not astrology and what science. There are so many hadiths in this regard, and that you cannot accept what the astrologers say just for the sake that they say do their calculations on the basis of the stars. So that we don't accept, and it's considered even haram because it doesn't have a base.
Thank you very much again, Mujahid. And I think we're coming up to the end of our time.